I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with Captain Paul Watson about a recent major triumph he led in the Southern Ocean, holding the Japanese whale hunt. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. In fact, it's the song that opens each episode of Captain Watson's reality series, Whale Wars. This is a portion of Smashing Pumpkins' Bullet with Butterfly Wings here on Talking Animals.
The world is a vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyer.
Slice of Smashing Pumpkins, Bullet with Butterfly Wings, an animal tune that's the opening theme of Whale Wars, and sort of the opening theme of today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Captain Paul Watson, founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and reluctant star of the aforementioned reality TV series Whale Wars. Captain Watson and his mostly volunteer Sea Shepherd colleagues recently made international news by halting the Japanese whale hunt mid-season in the Southern Ocean. We'll discuss this historic event, its implications, and more when we hear our conversation with Captain Watson in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, speak with not one but two more guests, Twyla Cole of the Humane Society of Pinellas, and Bobby Daly, general manager of the Carrollwood Petco. We'll also play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Yellow Ostrich Animal Band, featuring John Natchez, who's played with Beirut, Ockerville River, and Bishop Allen. Yellow Ostrich is opening for Say Hi this Sunday, March 13th at Crowbar. And later we'll also hear an animal song from that animal band, Yellow Ostrich. If it weren't so hackneyed, I'd say winning. Right now, though, it's time to hear some animal news and announcements, look at items of interest in animal news locally, regionally, nationally, sometimes internationally, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We also welcome your comments, which you can share on the air instantly by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing DJ at WMNF.org. So let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item I meant to actually get to, in fact, lead with last week, but I was a little discombobulated. I had animals in the studio, cats running over the soundboard. It was actually great, just the kind of chaos we're looking for, but I got sidetracked and forgot. That's sort of, I think, ahead of anyone else, even here in town at the time, at least. Frank Cherubino, a columnist for the Palm Beach Post, had written in the latter part of February about Jim Norman, yes, Republican state senator from Tampa, who had introduced a bill that would make it a first-degree felony, the kind, as Frank points out, that allows up to a 30-year prison sentence for anybody who photographs or videotapes anything on a Florida farm without first getting written permission from the farmer. Norman's bill specifies that this includes, quote, any tract of land cultivated for the purpose of agricultural production, the raising and breeding of domestic animals, or the storage of a commodity. And it raises this question, Frank notes. If you happen to be driving by a farm and see some animals grazing, would snapping a photo of them without proper written consent make you a felon? Quote here, this bill is so vague it's clearly unconstitutional, not to mention stupid, said Lucy Dalgish, the executive director for the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. There are already trespassing laws, and any invasion of privacy is covered in a state's civil code, she said. But in this case, what are you doing? Invading the animal's private space? Dalgish asked, and it goes on from there. So, well, let's see how far that bill advances, at least as written. I'm sure at the very least, Senator Norman may tinker with that. We will keep a close eye on that, of course. Now, again, as you might know from listening to Talking Animals, if you have over the years, we're pretty bonkers, of course, about animals generally, but about elephants in particular. So look like taken with this story that first found in Discovery News. Elephants recently aced a test of their intelligence and ability to cooperate, with two of them even figuring out ways that the researchers hadn't previously considered to obtain food rewards. The study published in the latest proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences highlights not only the intelligence of individual elephants, but also the ability of these animals to cooperate and understand the value of teamwork. Scientists now believe elephants are in league with chimpanzees and dolphins as being among the world's most cognitively advanced animals. Quote, elephant sociality is very complex, lead author Joshua Plotwick told Discovery News. Social groups are made up of matriarchal herds, an older female is in charge, and varying levels of relatedness among members. Cooperation in elephants was most likely necessary in a context of communal care for and protection of young. He goes on, in the wild, there are fascinating anecdotes of elephants working together to lift or help fallen members and forming clusters to protect younger elephants, added Plotnick, a Cambridge University researcher who is also head of research at Thailand's Golden Triangle Asian Elephant Foundation. Tests of elephant intelligence and their abilities are rare simply because working with these large and potentially dangerous animals poses risks. To meet the challenge, Plotnick and colleagues reworked a classic 1930s experiment used on primates. So what they did is they positioned a sliding table holding enticing red bowls of yummy corn, yummy if you're an elephant in particular, some distance away from a volleyball net. A rope was tied around the table such that the table would only move if two elephants working together pulled on the dangling rope ends. If just one elephant pulled, the rope would unravel. To get to the front of the volleyball net, the elephants had to walk down two separate roped-off lanes. And as it goes on to explain here, they quickly figured out that working in concert, they could get that corn, and a couple went beyond that. Said we were pleasantly surprised to see the youngest elephant use her foot to hold the rope so that her partner had to do all the work. I hadn't thought about this beforehand, and a new one, the elephant in question, seemed to be figured out by chance, but it speaks volumes to the flexibility of elephant behavior that she was able to figure this out and stick to it. Yay, elephants. All right, on a sort of a little darker note here, this comes from the Lakeland Ledger. A nearly hairless Pomeranian shivered at Polk County Animal Control on Friday after sheriff's investigators said they pulled it and 183 other dogs from a Lakeland couple's filth-covered home. Bradley and Elizabeth Roden are accused of hoarding the dogs and two cats in a home infested with flies, roaches, and rats just off Rockridge Road, according to the Polk County Sheriff's Office. They were charged Thursday with 40 counts of animal cruelty and issued court summons. Dogs appear to have been fed but suffered from a lack of care. One had a bone protruding through its foot. Others had infections, etc. So Sheriff Grady Judd says, the couple seemed to collect animals until they couldn't give them proper care. There's never an acceptable explanation. The woman of the couple considered them her children, Judd said. Well. And this struck me for, well, it seems novel at best, from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch over the weekend. The city's new animal control strategy is leaving dangerous animals on city streets, allowing, quote-unquote, packs of dogs to roam and confusing residents searching for lost pets. Two animal welfare groups told Mayor Francis Lay in a letter this week, the problem is so quickly reaching impending crisis, quote-unquote, the letter said, the city must consider a merger of its animal control operations with St. Louis counties. The letter sent Thursday by the Humane Society of Missouri and Animal Protective Association Association of Missouri said their shelters have been flooded by strays since last summer when the city closed its decrepit Gasconade street pound and transferred shelter duties to two other nonprofits, Stray Rescue and Animal House. Quote, "We believe these significant increases are a clear indication of the serious stray animal problem in St. Louis City," wrote Humane Society President Kathy Warnick, Vice President Pam Nicholson, and Animal Protective Association Executive Director Steve Kaufman. "It's only a matter of time before another tragedy occurs," they continue. "We must not allow that to happen." So we'll follow that, but it was a little on the laissez-faire side, and then that's what seems to happen. I want to let you know, too, about something else coming up locally here. Petapalooza is going to be held this Sunday, March 13th, Coachman Park in Clearwater, and be music and pups and other things. Chris Allen, Ryan Starr, Matt Hires, and others will be performing, and there'll be various adoptable animals, cats, dogs, and others on hand, and vendors and food. So that's again this Sunday, March 13th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can find out more probably at animalbasedcharities.org. One of the folks involved, and also coming up locally, Friday, March 18th, Dr. Melanie Joy, author of the best-selling book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, and the guest on Talking Animals last February when that book was newly published, will be in town at Loving Hut Restaurant on Fletcher Avenue in Tampa to giving a talk from 7 to 8 p.m. So I'll also be vegan buffet available as well. So to find out more about this, details, etc., go to floridavoicesforanimals.org. That's Dr. Joy, Friday the 18th at Loving Hut Restaurant from 7 to 8 p.m. And also coming up a little bit further down the road, Tales, quote-unquote, T-A-I-L-S, of the Arabian Nights, fundraiser to benefit Raffle Rescue Incorporated, will be held March 26th at Tarpon Springs Castle Winery from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And there'll be music and dancers and food, all kinds of things. So you can find out more or purchase tickets by calling 727-697-7034. And finally, winding up on, of course, the Talking Animals Festival. I want to remind you again, it's April 3rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Lowry Park, right next door to the zoo. And we'll have 12 bands playing animal songs. We announced those recently. You can find those and the kind of music they play at talkinganimals.net. Find the little festival banner. Click on that. There's all kinds of information, and including our cool poster is displayed there. And you can download an 8.5x11 version of the color poster. Or you can just call us right here, 813-239-9663, or email talkinganimals@wmnf.org. We'd be happy to send you one or more posters to put up in your restaurant, coffee shop, neighborhood, dog park, wherever it might be. And meanwhile, if you're someone who might be thinking about being a vendor or a tabler, spaces are filling up fast, and we did have to turn away some towards the end of last year's festival, so we anticipate we'll reach capacity earlier this year. So you can, again, download the forms at the festival page at talkinganimals.net. Again, if you have any questions about any of this, you can email talkinganimals@wmnf.com. org. So, again, we're going to have $10 microchipping thanks to Animal Coalition of Tampa. Healthy weight exams thanks to Dr. Hart. Those are free. Yoga classes for kids, those are free. It looks like now we're going to have a bounce house. So this event is it's the family event thing. It's got an animal event thing and a music event thing all rolled into one. So hope you'll join us on April 3rd at Lowry Park. All right, it's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Brian Regan with a Captain Watson-relevant piece called Whale Noises on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I saw this documentary recently on whales. This guy has dedicated his life to telling you what the whales are saying. Wow. I don't know how you'd argue with him when he turns in his report. And he just throws it down there. Well, here's what the whales are saying. Okay, thanks, Charlie. Just looking back. Here's what the whales are saying. Yeah, Charlie figured it out. They show how he does it. He's out on a ship. He's got a pencil. and he deciphers the whale noises as he hears them. You know, he'll hear like, you know, he's like, going, oh, okay. Oh, he's lonely. No, you're lonely. I'd like to do that for like 2 weeks and then turn around and find out that the door's squeaking behind you.
All right. That's Brian Regan with a piece called Whale Noises, taken from his CD simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to hear from today's guest, Captain Paul Watson. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Captain Watson is founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and at the center of the popular Animal Planet reality TV series Whale Wars. Captain Watson and his Sea Shepherd colleagues recently made international news by halting the Japanese whale hunt mid-season in the Southern Ocean. We'll explore how that came down, the implications, and what's ahead for Sea Shepherd. Captain Watson has been doing this sort of work for decades, and along the way he's cemented a reputation as a whip-smart, passionate, and outspoken advocate. Always, always outspoken. For instance, he was also a co-founder of Greenpeace, but with the comments he offers here, well, pretty sure he won't be invited to the Greenpeace Christmas party. He's in Hobart, Tasmania, which is 16 hours ahead, ruling out a live interview today, I'm afraid. So in a conversation recorded Monday, this is Captain Paul Watson on Talking Animals. Thanks for joining us again, Captain Watson, on Talking Animals. And, of course, much to talk about today, but under the circumstances, it seemed a little ridiculous to start out discussing anything other than the Japanese halting this season's whale hunt. So thanks, obviously, to Sea Shepherd's efforts. So maybe you could just back up a bit and set the scene, noting maybe some key incidents, good or bad, that you see as crucial to precipitating the Japanese calling it quits.
Our efforts over the last 7 years have been a cumulative one. Every year we've been going down stronger. Every year they've been going down weaker. And this year actually was the most uneventful year. We found them early. We got onto their stern slipway, we shut down their operations, and they just gave up. And they were able to take 172 whales, which is about 15% of their quota, but then they just gave up and they were ordered back to Japan early. So all indications are is that they won't be returning, which is good, so we won't have to return here in the future, which means that it's been an unqualified victory.
Well, so before it reached that point, did it start off typical, to the extent any of this, of course, activity could ever be considered typical? I mean, anyone who's, followed things or, of course, been a viewer of Whale Wars knows that last year, you know, yielded some really contentious clashes and, obviously most notably when a Japanese ship rammed and sank a small boat of yours, the Adagil. So how did this season begin? Did it seem to pick up where things left off or escalate, or did it always just seem like they were a little bit muted in their effectiveness?
This year they were 2.5 weeks late arriving, so we were able to be there well before they arrived. They only came down with 4 vessels instead of 7, which indicates that they're having some severe financial problems. They also had a lot of problems finding a supply vessel and didn't get one till late in the system. So there was a big difference. I think with the Japanese fleet is now $200 million in debt and in subsidy loans to the Japanese government. So they're suffering financially quite heavily.
Yeah.
And I think this was year was just a straw that broke their back, and so I don't really think they'll be coming back.
Wow. So was there any particular day or encounter with the Japanese whalers this season? I mean, obviously they arrived kind of with a much smaller fleet, and they arrived later, I guess I should say. But was there anything else that looked kind of pivotal beyond that, now looking back, they're like, okay, well, this is where, you know, the beginning of the end for them and the hunt this season?
No, they realized that once we were on their stern slipway, we'd been chasing them for a month, and they'd been running and not being able to whale very much, but when we finally were able to move in on the Nishan Maru and latch onto its stern slipway, they knew that they couldn't kill any more whales, and it was in a few days after that that they called it off.
I guess maybe again because of the way things went last year, some people might have expected they'd you know, not maybe knowing about the financial situation you just described, but that they'd almost redouble their resolve to complete the season, even if that meant falling short of the killing quota. I mean, just on the level of screwy, misplaced pride, if nothing else. So were you leery when it started to seem like, hey, maybe these guys are actually going to call it quits? I mean, was there a part of you or other colleagues that thought maybe this is some kind of crazy trick? Or
we weren't really concerned because we were in a position to shut down their operations, whether they stayed or whether they left. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
So once we were told that they were leaving, we still, you know, of course, we didn't abandon our pursuit. And even after the Ministry of Fisheries in Japan called them and they headed north and were out of the whale sanctuary, we followed them for about 500 miles north. And, you know, it's pretty clear that they're going home.
And did you still nonetheless find this at some point along the way surprising, even as you know, you ensured that you know, they were indeed going home? I mean, or did you come in this season aware, for example, that they were having those kind of financial difficulties and sort of almost not assuming, but sort of suspecting that maybe things would go this way this season?
Our objective from the beginning was to sink the Japanese whaling fleet economically, to bankrupt them, and we could see that we were succeeding in doing that. So I felt that we would shut them down either this year or next year, but certainly the writing was on the wall for the end of the whaling industry as far as their operations in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary are concerned.
All right, well, I certainly have more questions. I just want to let people know this is Talking Animals. We're speaking with Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in a conversation recorded Monday. So your feeling now is that they are gone and not to return next season. So effectively that the whaling that has gone on in the Southern Ocean is gone, done.
Yeah, there's about, say, a 20% chance that they might return, but if they do, we'll be prepared for them. But all indications are is that, you know, they're going to shut it down. In August, the International Maritime Organization comes up with even a new regulation forbidding the burning of heavy fuel below 60 degrees south, and the Nishan Maru would then be legal under IMO regulations, and they can't afford to replace that boat. They can't afford to refit it. So they're really, that could be their you know, way of saving face and getting out of this, is they simply cannot bring that ship down here legally.
And so this, you know, this obviously made, you know, international news and is monumental news. But anyone who's sort of followed your career for a while and know you've been doing, you know, this sort of work for decades, knows you're also pretty unflappable. So once you knew the hunt was truly over and that, again, extrapolating that it seemed like it's not just over for the season, but over, I mean, what was your reaction? I mean, how much of a triumph did it seem to you? How excited did you become?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, so
I don't
know if I get overly excited about it. But,
right.
You know, certainly the crew were quite excited about it. I mean, that's what they set out to do, and it certainly gave them a big morale, a boost to know that, you know, they came down here, they took action, and they were successful.
Sure.
So that was pretty good.
Yeah. Well,
and also, I think it also established that, you know, our way of doing things can be effective. We come under a lot of criticism, most notably from people who should be on our own side, who say, oh, you know, your tactics are alienating people, your tactics are this. And unfortunately, you know, I think we live in a world where the only thing that people understand and actually respond to is economics. And so our tactics are always to intervene economically, to cost them their profits, to bankrupt them.
Well, you know, speaking of that, and along those lines, in fact, I mean, I just noted a moment ago that you seem unflappable and in the face of all kinds of crises or attacks, whether they're unfolding around you on the seas or elsewhere, but that's, you know, hardly to suggest you don't, you know, get angry. For example, last week you posted a commentary on the Sea Shepherd website entitled "The Terrible, Troubling Tribulations of Being Called a Shutter Eco-Terrorist." So with what you had just said in mind, I mean, for those who maybe haven't had a chance to read the piece yet, maybe you could outline sort of what prompted the essay and the main points you sort of make in explaining, you know, what exactly the Sea Shepherd does and doesn't do in its pursuits.
Well, last week, the Japanese foreign minister called in the ambassadors in the Netherlands, Australia, and New Zealand to say they had to take action against Sea Shepherd Bird. And my response to that is, what kind of action did they expect them to take? We haven't committed any crimes. We haven't hurt anybody. Japan hasn't even charged us with a crime. So it seemed like a very bizarre sort of thing. But Japan's PR people have been calling us eco-terrorists for so long, they're starting to believe that we actually are terrorists. But, you know, the word terrorist is being used so loosely these days that nobody even knows what it means. Right now, I think it means like anybody who we disagree with is now a terrorist.
Right.
So I was just putting that out as a satire, really, to illustrate the foolishness of the whole thing. And the bottom line is this. You know, if we're eco-terrorists, arrest us. Otherwise, shut up. You know, I'm getting tired of all of this rhetoric, which is totally meaningless. Sea Shepherd's been operating for 32 years. We haven't injured anybody. We haven't been convicted of a crime. I mean, we even have Greenpeace calling us eco-terrorists. Well, Greenpeace has had people killed. Greenpeace has had committed felonies, and Greenpeace has had people go to prison. We've never even had any of that stuff, and yet they're sitting there calling us eco-terrorists, all because we're aggressive. I happen to believe that you don't save whales by hanging banners and take pictures. You get in there, you intervene, you shut down their operations. We're not a protest group. We're an interventionist group. We're an anti-poaching organization. We're taking action against criminal operations, and there's a big difference there.
Absolutely. Well, there's a few things there that I'd like to sort of follow up on, including that for people who don't know, I guess that's a measure of how estranged you've sort of become philosophically, I guess, with Greenpeace, who, of course, you helped co-found all those years ago. So I guess you guys just have a sort of growing philosophical gulf, it sounds like.
Well, you know, the big organizations, they just become totally useless, in my opinion. You know, they get up there, they start making a lot of money, and then they're afraid to do anything because the bottom line is they're more concerned about their payroll than they are about getting the job done. And Greenpeace has become one of the largest eco-corporations on the planet, you know. It's a feel-good organization. People make money, you know, people join it in order to feel good, and, you know, it employs this vast administration, which sends out 50 million pieces of junk mail every year at a cost of $70 million for a return of $350 million. It's a major corporation.
So for them, the bottom line is the bottom line, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the strength of any movement, whether it be the animal rights movement, the conservation movement, environmental movement, has to lie in diversity, but also in the passion of individuals. That's where the difference is that small grassroots organizations and individuals are what make changes, not big bureaucratic administrations.
And you know, this sort of can't help but remind me in that commentary that you posted last week that we've touched on a little bit, perhaps you'd like to recount. I mean, among the things I thought were just you know, sort of telling and interesting in there were the story that you recounted about being given a wooden statue by the Tibetan monk, and then sort of later you know, having the pleasure of meeting the Dalai Lama. Maybe you could recount that a little bit, just because I thought the, you know, sort of his final words were pretty notable.
Yes, the Dalai Lama is a supporter of Sea Shepherd, and that's because he understands what we do, which I call it aggressive nonviolence. But he gave me this little statue, and I asked him what it was. After we had received it, we'd had it for a couple of years, I asked him, I had the opportunity to meet him, and he said, well, it's called Hayagriva. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he says, it's a symbol for the compassionate aspect of Buddha's wrath. And I said, well, what does that mean? He says, oh, well, you never want to hurt anybody, but sometimes when they cannot see enlightenment, you scare the hell out of them until they do. In other words, he understood what our approach was. It was really, you know, to intimidate, but not to cause bodily injury.
Right. So, again, even there, the distinction is not lost on him, even though it seems like, you know, many people would not understand what the mission is and what the achievements are of Sea Shepherd. So you know, this, I guess, in some ways may figure in, for some people at least, to whale wars, which again has become, you know, for any number of reasons, I guess, an extremely popular television show. And yet, you know, you've certainly been the reluctant star and famously quoted over the years saying that you're probably the only reality star who's trying to put himself out of business on television. So I assume that I know from season to season, with the activity of you know, sort of disrupting and halting or trying to halt the whaling, that there have been, you know, some episodes, some seasons have had some episodes, some seasons have had more. But I imagine this season would probably be cut short. And from what you're saying, I think this current season that I guess was being filmed or was being filmed would sort of be the end of whale wars.
Well, there will be a fourth fourth season of Whale Wars, and by, I think, 12 or 13 episodes, because a lot did happen. And, of course, it was a victory and, you know, the finalization of all of this. And, yes, it will be the end of Whale Wars in the Southern Ocean. We are talking about Animal Planet, about continuing with our opposition against Norway and Iceland. But I'm certainly happy that we're finished with this fight down here in the Southern Oceans, and hopefully we won't have to return. There is, like, a small chance they may return, and we will be ready for them. But,
sure.
You know, we'll continue to work with Animal Planet on other issues with sharks and seals and fish.
Right, right. And so in the Whale Wars has become a popular TV series, I noted a moment ago. I mean, to what extent has that been a boon to obviously raise the profile and just general awareness of Sea Shepherd versus kind of a mixed bag in terms of either an image or message that you know, either gets a little fuzzy or doesn't quite align with Sea Shepherd's? For example, you just mentioned a moment ago that it's not a protest group, it's not an animal rights group, but I think there are probably some who watch Whale Wars who may not be quite clear on what it is and isn't. So has it been a mixed bag, or has it been strictly a positive experience to have a Whale Wars series?
I think it's been a positive experience. I'm not really concerned about people. We get a lot of criticism. It doesn't really bother me. You know, people have opinions.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that, you know, our clients are whales and sharks and seals and fish and seabirds and turtles. Those are our clients. We don't care what people think. They can call us all the names in the world they want. They can criticize everything we do. You know, they can trivialize us. I don't care.
Sure.
All I'm concerned about is results. We get results, and we get results for the for the species that we care about, not for, you know, we're not here to win any popularity contests. We're not here to say the right things and do the, you know, act properly and be polite and everything here. We're here to basically rock the boat. Sometimes we sink a few. But, you know, we're here to cause trouble.
Right.
Because, and if people don't like what I say and if people don't like what we do, well, that's fine. I mean, it's my job is to get people upset, you know, to think about what we're doing to this planet.
And penetrate things. I mean, I had mentioned just in advance of this and when it would air on Wednesday, I just put a little thing on Facebook and, you know, one guy immediately wrote back like, wow, I'll definitely tune in. Captain Watson is a crazy effer. And I thought, well, not the most eloquent description, but, you know, the point was, you know, they and others know that, you know, when you do something, you take on something and when you speak out on something, it's no holds barred, and you always have the animals kind of first and foremost.
Yeah, I know that's definitely the case. You know, so we really aren't concerned with people.
Yeah,
you know what people think about us. Oscar Wilde once said, "The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about." So as long
exactly.
as we're talking about what we're doing, I think we're getting somewhere.
For sure. Well, so I guess obviously the Sea Shepherd's agenda is ever moving and expanding. So I guess we'd sort of be remiss, sadly, if we didn't at least touch on the annual seal hunt, which has been underway this year again since the latter part of February. And I guess the gray seal quota got upped, if I'm not mistaken, this year from I think 50,000 to 60,000.
Oh, they keep putting the quota up. The thing has become political football in Canada. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's got nothing to do with needs or economics or anything. It's just, you know, the Canadian stubborn pride on the part of the government and everything. The commercial seal hunt is pretty much shut down. There's no markets for seal pelts. Europe has banned the pelts. That's been a very successful thing. Last year, even though they had a quota of 325,000, they didn't take more than 60,000. They've raised up these quotas and they're losing. You know, sealers aren't going out because they're not making any money.
Right.
And, the approach was an economic one. We destroyed the market. However, you know, the effort continues. I think Rebecca Aldworth of HSUS is, you know, the one leading the fight there now. She's doing a great job.
Yeah.
And, we backed out of it because, it's no longer, you know, we achieved what we wanted to do, which was to, end it commercially. That is to destroy the market. And we'll sit back and watch it right now. I mean, our concerns right now are more focused on the slaughter of the seals in Namibia, which has been sort of out of sight and out of mind for a while. So there's no need for us to duplicate Rebecca's efforts. Like I said, she's doing a good job.
Sure. And so maybe you could tell us a little bit about that other seal slaughter that maybe, like you say, a little under the most people's radar.
Yeah, Namibia, you know, kills, you know, tens of thousands of seals every year, the South African fur seal, and how many people are really aware of that. So, and not much effort has been done to oppose it. So we're starting to turn our attention there to see what we can do. So right now we're at the process of looking at what kind of tactics and strategies to utilize to bring this to the world's attention and to directly intervene to shut it down.
Wow. All right. Well, and again, we should remind people that there's a great website, seashepherd.org, that covers all the sort of news and campaigns. And again, how people can volunteer and get involved and help Sea Shepherd in these various campaigns and efforts. So, Captain Paul Watson, thank you again for joining us on Talking Animals today, and congratulations on the victory in the Southern Ocean, and just all your great work over many, many years' time. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. In a moment, we're going to speak with Twyla Cole of the Humane Society of Pinellas, which has some key events coming up, including its big mutt strut on March 19th. First, though, it's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. There'll be a prize. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Yellow Ostrich, who are opening for Say Hi this Sunday, March 13th, at Crowbar, and later we'll hear an animal tune by Yellow Ostrich. So, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Well, if calls come in able to name that animal tune, we'll take them at the opportune moment. But right now it's time for a little conversation with Twyla Cole. She's the special events coordinator at the Humane Society of Pinellas. Twyla, are you there?
I am. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining today on Talking Animals.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about your role and just, I guess the nickel tour of Humane Society of Pinellas as part of that.
I myself am the special events coordinator here for the shelter. I also do the fundraising, marketing, PR, things along those lines. So we are getting ready for our largest annual event right around the corner, March 19th. We have our 19th annual Mutt Strut on March 19th. So we're actually making a really big to-do about it as a golden birthday. We have a lot of fun new surprises and things that are going to be out on Honeymoon Island that day, including one of the massive superboats that's going to be brought out by Sunprint Management. We're going to have the mascot is going to be out there. We're going to have sheet cakes that are going to be donated and served by Costco. We've had wonderful sponsors in Fran Haish, attorney at law, along with Homeport Marina, right in Ozona area on Palm Harbor.
Great.
So it's just going to be a huge event. We have just a lot of stuff going on. And then we've got Bark at the Ballpark coming up 3 weeks right behind that.
Okay, well, let's come back to that in one sec. I just want to give a little bit more on Mutt Strut, because that is a biggie, as you say, 19th year. And also, I'm sure this seems like the fix is in, but when you made a passing reference to the mascot, I guess I'd sort of be remiss if I didn't ask what the mascot's name is.
The mascot is Duncan.
Yeah, what are the odds? Come on, folks. That's incredible. So anyway, yeah, this sounds like a huge event. Obviously, again, you probably got it pretty well down in the 19th year. And maybe you could just explain a little more precisely where exactly it's taking place for people who might be interested in heading out there on the 19th.
Yes, it's out on Honeymoon Island State Park, which is right off of the coast of Dunedin. If you were to take Curlew from US 19 or even East Lake McMullen Booth all the way towards the Gulf of Mexico, you'll go over Dunedin Causeway and you have no choice but to go out onto Honeymoon Island State Park. If you haven't been out there, it's just a beautiful place to go. We're so lucky to have that in our backyard. Plus, they have a dog beach out there. Of course, keep all your dogs on leashes, but it's a great place to be able to take your dog to the beach, and they're welcome to be there.
Wow. Well, this sounds sounds great. Sounds pretty idyllic there. And you might have said this, and if I missed it, I'm sorry. But what are the hours from when to when? Is it start at 10 a.m. I want to say, or
yep. The whole event is from 10 until 2.
Okay.
We'll start taking in the registrations at 10 o'clock. Our vendors will be set up. We're expecting over 60 vendors that will be set up throughout the park. So arrive promptly at 10, get your registration, and then that will give you plenty of time to shop around. At 11:30, we will have our official event ceremony where we can thank the wonderful supporters and sponsors that we have, along with Home Shopping Network host Alicia Perez is going to be out there, and she will lead the actual strut, which will be along Osprey Trail, a beautiful nature trail on the north end of Honeymoon Island. The park team gets it all prepped and ready for us. They do a walkthrough the morning of, make sure the trail is nice, clean, dry, and safe for all the animals. And you get to walk a mile-long strut on the trail.
That's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The last time somebody was posting pictures, they were seeing bald eagles and osprey, and I'm seeing little baby ospreys starting to look over the nest edges, and
wow,
it's just a beautiful time to be out at the park.
It sounds wonderful. Well, let's let folks know that they can find out more information on this and other things by going to humanesocietyofpinellas.org, and let's just throw out quickly the date and maybe just three or four details, just because I think we're just about out of time, Twyla, on the bark at the ballpark, the forthcoming one at least on April 10th.
Excellent. Bark at the ballpark. We have two for the 2010 season. First one is on April 10th. It's a Sunday. Gates open at noon for a 1 o'clock game. And then we'll be back again July 9th for a Saturday night game. It's your time to bring your dog into Bright House Field and actually watch baseball with your four-legged friend right next to you.
I can't beat that.
Not at all.
A great companion. So, Twyla Cole, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And again, Twyla Cole from the Humane Society of Pinellas, and information on Mutt Strut and Bark at the Ballpark, et cetera, and other things can all be found at humanesocietyofpinellas.org. So thanks for your good work and good luck on these events.
Thank you so much, Duncan. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, we do have, I think, at least one or two patient types who might be able to name that animal tune from before. Can you name that animal tune? Oh! Just I just pushed the envelope of patient. That's all right. That's the way things go. All right, so we're going to have a brief chat with Bobby Daly, general manager of the Carrollwood Petco. But before that, we're going to First, hear an animal song that I've been trying to play for the last couple weeks. And, in fact, that cat, Jasmine, started playing it last week. But we'll hear this one. It's an animal song, sort of, I guess, from Nick Lowe. And then we'll come back and speak with Bobby. It's Talking Animals.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars, restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me. The beast in me has had to learn to live with pain and how to shelter from the rain. And in the twinkling of an eye, might have to be restrained. God help the beast in me. Sometimes it tries to kid me that it's just a teddy bear, or even somehow managed to vanish in the air. And that is when I must beware of the beast in me, that everybody They've seen him out dressed in my clothes, patently unclear. If it's New York or New Year. God help the beast in me. The beast in me.
All right, that's Nick Lowe with The Beast in Me. Kind of an animal song, right? All right, we're pretty flexible on that. Okay, so let's chat now with Bobby Daly. As I mentioned before, he's the general manager of the Carrollwood Pet Co. But to those of us at Talking Animals and the Talking Animals Festival, he's more than that. Bobby, are you there?
I am there. How are you doing, Duncan?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. So first of all, in the interest of full disclosure, we should mention that Petco is a sponsor of the Talking Animals Festival. But also partly what I was alluding to there is that really outside of WMNF, when I had this kind of half-baked notion, a year and a half ago, maybe more, for this festival, you were the sort of the first non-WMNFer to say, hey, this sounds like you're onto something. And, you were very, very supportive. And, so you hold a special place in the Talking Animals Festival hearts. So.
Well, thank you very much. And we're looking forward to, joining up with you again this year. If it's anything like last year, it's going to be a wonderful time.
Well, cool. Flattery will get you everywhere, Bobby. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about, because some of the stuff that goes on at Petco's, I mean, people know if they, shop for their pets there, but not everybody may know some of the other cool, things that all animal lovers would care about, especially when it comes to all the adoption events. So I believe there's something coming up this weekend that's even on a nationwide level. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Petco and the Petco Foundation, we support this thing called Think Adoption First. And what we want people to do is consider adoption before any other option. Just consider it, because there's so many animals out there that just need forever homes, forever loving homes. And they're so plentiful that we would like people to try that first. And upcoming this 12th and 13th of March is a nationwide adoption event. That means every Petco will be hosting an adoption event, and we do this on a monthly basis. My particular store does it every week, but you could go to any Petco and join up with these adoption partners and rescue groups that are out there saving animals from these shelters and try to get them into a happy, loving home.
So for example, I mean, that's it must be a massive undertaking and a lot of coordination to have it be nationwide, but just kind of keeping it more focused a little bit for the moment locally. So if someone were to come out to your store, the Carrollwood store, or just any other, Petco, wherever they happen to be hearing the show, what would they expect to find? Multiple groups, rescues and others with adoptables, or how does it work exactly?
What usually happens is you'll have an adoption group, and in my case, I'll have a couple here this weekend that will you will have an application, and you would actually apply, because what they do, they want to very much make sure that it's a good fit, because these guys have been at a shelter before, they have been rescued, we're trying to keep them from euthanization, so by being a little scrutinous onto where they go into their homes, we could get them a good home, a good match, and make it, like I said, a forever thing, so that we don't have to see it go through the revolving door thing.
Cool. Well, that sounds really important. So when you refer to like adoption partners, what does that mean? Exactly.
What that means is we have in this particular case at my store, I have Los Angeles and Big Heart Rescue and Rehabilitation. They will get an animal and find it a home. And with their help, and ours, we've been able to, last year, place over 300 animals, mainly dogs and cats, into homes where it might not have ended up that way if this had not had happened. We work with the Humane Society. We work with Bay Area Greyhound Rescue. Every store has a few that they work with. So we're very much community in the community working with these groups here.
And when you say there was 300 animals that you found homes for in the past year, do you mean just at your store?
That was just at the Carrollwood store. Every month, nationwide, there's thousands of dogs and cats that are saved. And in the past, about every year, we save almost 200,000 animals from going through the end that isn't so nice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wow, well, that's great. And so I guess whether it's, you know, this may be partly dictated by your adoption partners, but if someone is hearing this, said, hey, man, I'm going to check this out because this weekend wherever there's a Petco store near me, there's going to be obviously an adoption event or two. So is there a basic kind of cost that applies here, or does it vary a little bit with whatever the adoption partner kind of determines, or how does that work?
Yeah, it does vary a little bit. Some animals have more needs than others, and so it really depends on the group and what they've been trying to. A lot of these guys do it right out of their own pocket, so they just try to recoup a little bit of it. But it all depends on who you go to. I mean, there's places you could go, like on the internet to I don't know if I could say r.com, but there you could go there and see ways of getting into adoption groups, or even helping out with the foundation, which helps local adoption groups nationwide. You know, they help the local ones as well as ones nationwide.
Wow. Well, that sounds like it's really covered. So I we're sort of just about at the end of our time, probably, Bobby. But just for folks, you know, again, there's any number of places they could go in the area. But where is your store located?
I'm on the northeast corner of Fletcher and Dale Mabry, right here in Carrollwood.
Okay.
And we'd love to see some people out here. We also have a event happening out in Port Richey. They have a share of the love. Pretty much all the Petcos are doing that right now.
That's great. So, and I guess there's sort of an overall Petco website, but not necessarily websites for individual stores. Is that correct?
Well, it does have individual stores and location and what's going on at individual stores.
Will
also have link-ups on how to get in touch with the adoption groups. So you could kind of preview animals before you even come out and see them. So if you get one in mind, you go, wow, this one looks really good. There's a bio on them and tells them a little bit about what's going on about them. That's a good way to get familiar and kind of know before you go type of thing.
So great.
What you're expecting.
So do you go to Petco.com and to then start kind of zeroing in on
Yes, the Petco.com has links to animal adoption groups here local in the local area.
Oh, great. Well, Bobby, this sounds really cool, and I hope you have a big, successful event and find a lot of homes for animals this weekend. And thanks for talking to us today, and we'll see you on April 3rd at Lowry Park at the Talking Animals Festival.
Yes, I'm looking so much forward to seeing you guys here. So thank you very much, Tom.
All right. Thanks again. Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Again, we're now airing every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to noon, so we'll be back next Wednesday, March 16th, when our guest will be Elaine Boozler, who has been a touring stand-up comedian since 1973 and is a longtime committed animal advocate. In fact, in 2001, she founded her own animal organization, Tales of Joys. So we'll talk all about that and other things with Elaine, next Wednesday, the 16th. So I hope you'll join me then. And, she's also, by the way, playing Ruth Eckert Hall, March 18th. So, I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, and keep an eye out for updates and announcements about the Talking Animals Festival. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. His guests today are Rah Rah Riot, performing in studio, no less. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune, as promised. This is Yellow Ostrich. We're opening for Say Hi this Sunday, March 13th at Crowbar. So with a final nod, in a sense, to Captain Watson, this is a song called Whale, taking us right up to the NPR News. And then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Take care.
I will take you. Listen to me, then you will see, then you will see. Well, don't worry, well, just do as you please. I will accept if you'd rather leave. Open my heart, if you open your heart, open your heart. And I see more than you can realize. I accept that you will never understand, so I will gladly take your hand.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. NASA declares an end to a historic journey. 39 missions and nearly 27 years later,